Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. Before I continue, on August 30th at 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, I'm hosting another Zoom History Conference. This conference is all about T.G. Hamilton, a man who used to be the MLA in Winnipeg, and then he became a man who started conducting seances. But his seances were very popular, bringing people like Prime Minister William Lyon Mackenzie King and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle to his house. It's a really interesting story, and you can register on my website for $5. Just go to CanadaEHX.com and click register. The conference is also free for my patrons, and you can become a patron for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. When we think of internment, we often think of Japanese internment, but there have been many other types of internments. And today, I'm talking with Todd, who's on the board of directors for the New Brunswick Internment Camp Museum, which is the only museum in Canada devoted to the history of non-Japanese World War II internment. And we talk about a variety of things, Jewish internment, German internment, Italian internment, and just the whole concept itself and whether it could ever happen again. It's a really interesting interview, and I hope you enjoy it. So let's get right to it. So tell me a bit about the New Brunswick Internment Camp Museum and how it got started.
Sure. The New Brunswick Internment Camp Museum is located in Minto, New Brunswick, and it has a collection of over 600 objects. And it is one of only two museums in Canada devoted exclusively to World War II internment, and only one of five in North America. The museum came about in 1997, but really the origins of it started it back in 1993, when a local teacher, who happens to also be my father, Ed Casey, was working with at-risk students and developing programs to keep them engaged and try to keep them in school. And he started to take them on little mini archaeology digs where the original site of the internment camp was. And that was extremely popular and very successful. And then he ended up having the students make a to-scale model of the camp as a project, which ended up then touring around New Brunswick. And my father won a national teaching award for that. And what they ended up doing was displaying some of the archaeological finds at the local elementary junior high school where my father worked. And when people started seeing that, the local population around New Brunswick, and specifically Minto, started bringing in more and more artifacts or objects that they had in their house. Maybe their father or grandfather was a guard at the camp or had some connection, and the collection just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it reached a tipping point that they decided to start a museum back in 1997.
Why focus on World War II versus, say, other times? Was it just because it was New Brunswick and that was kind of where more of that history lied, was World War II, than, say, like World War I or other times?
Well, it was because of the camp itself. So next to Minto, in a small little township called Ripples, which is halfway between Minto and Fredericton, which is the capital of New Brunswick, there was a World War II internment camp. And it is the only, or it was the only World War II internment camp in the Maritime Provinces. And the camp is gone. The only thing that's left that's extant and visible is the superstructure of the water tower. So it was a piece of history that a lot of people in Minto and in the area kind of knew about, but it was sort of being forgotten. And it was part of the local history of Minto, which is really just a small, originally coal mining town of about 2,000 people. But it also linked Minto to the greater narrative of Canadian history and Canada's involvement in World War II.
Obviously, Japanese internment kind of, it's the one everybody knows about, maybe the one that gets written about the most. So do you feel like the internments, like you mentioned, in New Brunswick, that kind of gets lost in the history when compared to the Japanese internment? And like you said, kind of the people just didn't even in that area were forgetting about that internment camp that was there, you know, 70, 80 years ago now.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that it's getting a bit lost. However, you know, the history of Japanese internment is incredibly important. Don't get me wrong. It is. But the other World War II internment camps in Canada, of which there were many, are equally important. And, you know, those camps interred Jewish refugees who were escaping Nazi Germany in the Holocaust, and they interred Canadian citizens who, for whatever reason, maybe spoke out against the war or had links to fascism, or some of them just the fact that they had been born in Austria or Germany or Italy were incarcerated. And it's a difficult part of Canada's history, but I think it's very important to be told.
I don't want to say like, oh, you know, that would never happen today. We wouldn't do things like that today. Anything can happen. But why do you think internment was generally accepted back then as like, that's something we need to do because it's wartime?
Well, I mean, you're right. It's happening sadly now in south of the border in the U.S. But it does seem to, you know, the concept of incarcerating groups of people does crop up more very often during times of war. And I would argue that that's due in part to fear and racism. Xenophobia, you know, it's a powerful aphrodisiac for people who are looking to oppress or control a certain population or group. It happened in World War I, as you mentioned, and it happened in World War II in Canada.
This is kind of speculation, so it's always hard to say, but do you think something like internment like that could happen again in Canada? Or do you feel like we've moved past that thing and we've maybe learned from the lessons of the past with Japanese internment, German internment, and things like that?
Sadly, I fear that it could, but I am hopeful that it won't happen again in Canada. You know, as I mentioned, it's happening in the U.S. now with, with the current administration. So if we don't pay attention to our history and know our history, it's something that could happen again. So we have to always be very cognizant of that and make sure that it doesn't happen again. To be diligent, really.
Mm-hmm. Is war generally the reason, like the main reason people are interned, do you feel? Obviously, we saw it in the First World War, but especially in the Second World War with German, Jewish, and Japanese.
Yeah, and it was German, Jewish, Japanese, also Italian. Mm-hmm. Many, many Italian Americans were interred as well. Again, war creates this constructed narrative of us versus the other. And that can lead to, again, racism and, fear of the unknown. It's important that we know that this difficult history can happen because of war. You know, if you're at war with a group, you start to group that person, or those people as sort of under one cluster, which is, stereotyping them. And it can be under the, oppression happens often under the auspices of, national interest. Even if some of the people that you are oppressing happen to be citizens of that country. Mm-hmm.
In terms of the camp that was in New Brunswick, what were the conditions like for the people who were interned there?
That's an excellent question. There were, I think first it's important to realize there were two phases of the internment camp in New Brunswick. The first phase housed or incarcerated mainly Jewish refugees. There were roughly 711 prisoners at that time in phase one, and they were mostly Jews who had escaped Austria or Germany to England and then were sent to Canada to for lack of a better word, they were concentration camps. Mm-hmm. The second phase was roughly from 1940 to 1941. The second phase was 1942 to 1945. The second phase housed both Canadians who had, for whatever reason, been deemed a security risk and were incarcerated. And they also, along with them, there were German and Italian merchant marines who had been captured, who were in the same camp.
And
so the conditions were different between those two phases. The first phase, they were, there were refugees, and I think there was a different view of them once they were in the camp and the guards and the officers realized that these were really people who were not a threat and they were not the enemy. And a lot of them were highly educated, a lot of them ended up having very profound impacts on Canadian history when they got out. Whereas with the second phase, there was this weird mixture of Canadians and actual enemy merchant marines, who, were the enemy mm-hmm. during the war, who fought against the Canadian Army.
With Japanese internment, we saw the males being put to work in work camps, especially up north in northern British Columbia. Did that happen there as well? Like, were these kind of working internment camps, or was it just they were kind of housed there and they stayed there and that was that?
They were working internment camps. The prison population was all male. There were no females at the camp. And this camp was called Camp B or Camp 70, depending on different periods of the war. We tend to refer to it as just Camp B-70. But it was a labor camp. The prisoners were required to work without pay to provide for basic camp functions like administration, cleaning, cooking. But any labor beyond camp maintenance was essentially voluntary and paid, but they were forced to work. They had to work five and a half days a week with only Saturdays, afternoons, and Sundays off. Most of the work involved going out into the wood and cutting firewood. the camp was in the middle of the Acadia Research Forest, and they cut and transported over 2,000 cords of wood a year just to feed the camp's 100 large wood-burning stoves. Each prisoner was expected to cut one cord of wood per day. And we have an account from a forestry officer during that time who said that the majority of the prisoners did not take to forestry work very well. He noted that, you know, they worked with, and I quote, great inefficiency, being untrained, unwilling, and poorly equipped. It was hard work, especially in winter. And I mean, you can imagine how cold it was, in Canada, from people who may not be used to that kind of weather to be out there cutting wood every day.
How many people were at the camp?
The first phase had, as I mentioned, 711 prisoners, and the second phase had over 2,000.
With the Japanese internment, we saw after it was finished, a lot more rights were given to Japanese Canadians. Certain racist restrictions, especially in British Columbia, were taken away. Did any kind of changes come after the war and after the internment camp was closed down for a lot of these people, especially who were refugees?
That's a great question. To my knowledge, there was no, there was no large act of reparation, it was more, case by case, different, especially for the refugees. Some of them they were allowed to apply to be released even during their incarceration into Canada. They could have a Canadian vouch for them, and if they could show that they could be of value to the war effort, some of them were released. One particular one was a gentleman named Fritz Bender, who was released so he could invent, because he was the inventor and he was working on it, he invented waterproof plywood. And that invention, which happened in Canada, the Canadian government agreed to remove him from the camp, and the waterproof plywood allowed the invention of the mosquito bomber, which was influential in the Allied forces winning the war. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some amazing individuals and individual stories from the camp. The mayor of Montreal, Chameleon Hood, was interned there while he was mayor. And surprisingly, after he was released, was reelected.
That's crazy that he was mayor and reelected.
A lot of people have written about Chameleon. He had a very, very interesting history. But also, Fritz Bender, who I mentioned, but also Fred Kaufman eventually became a Quebec Supreme Court judge. John Newmark became one of Canada's most important musicians and composers and accompanists. Helmut Kallman is considered, well, at least was considered, Canada's most distinguished music historian. He wrote A History of Music in Canada in 1534 to 1914, and he was chief of the music division of the National Library of Canada. Vincent Poggi was a very well-known artist. He did a lot of stained glass that are in a lot of the churches in Eastern Canada. And a lot of professors and doctors from all the universities in Canada, they're scattered with former internees or prisoners from Camp B-70. And going back to your original question, there was a gentleman named Oscar Bendel, who was a Canadian citizen, And he was only interred, from all accounts, because he was born in Austria. And the Canadian government seemed to want his property to build a factory. And the RCMP interred him. He was first interred in Petawawa and then moved to the New Brunswick camp. And they seized his property, kicked his family, his wife and his six kids out to the streets where they almost starved, and did not pay the family for the property. And he was released in 1943 and did not, the Canadian government finally returned the land to the Bendel family, but not until the year after he died.
Oh, jeez. When was that?
1996.
Oh, wow. So like,
Sorry, 1966.
So still 20 years, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, Oscar's, I'm writing an article about Oscar's story and history right now, because he was a talented painter, but his story is unbelievably tragic. In fact, when they released him from the camp, he had no money, and he's in New Brunswick. His family lives in Nobel, Ontario. He had no way to get home, so he walked from New Brunswick to Nobel, Ontario, over 1,600 kilometers.
Wow.
Sleeping in ditches. He slept in ditches. He slept on the edge of farms. He ate berries, drank out of the streams, and the family estimates it took him almost 6 months to get home.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Wow. That's an amazing story. One thing that you mentioned that's kind of really mind-boggling is the fact that we, obviously I'm not comparing the two, but the fact that we did have Jewish refugees essentially in camps, obviously not anywhere near as bad as what they went through in Europe, but still it's something we tend to forget that we had them in camps as well, at least when they were arrived. So we're not kind of like completely innocent of such things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Craig. And, and we need to be, words matter, and we do need to be careful, because these, we call them internment camps, but, internment really can be considered a euphemistic term used by government agencies to make incarceration kind of appear less cruel or more acceptable to the public. Which is part of the reason why we being Canadians, we didn't learn about this in our history books growing up, because the Canadian government was ashamed. And a concentration camp, which I would argue these were, they weren't death camps,
yeah,
but they were concentration camps, which, Merriam-Webster's dictionary simply defines concentration camp as a facility where persons, as prisoners of war, political prisoners, or refugees, are detained or confined. They exist whenever a government holds groups of civilians outside of the normal legal process to segregate people considered foreigners or outsiders. And that's what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically, concentration, it's concentrating people.
Yeah, exactly. It's concentrating them into a camp. Yeah,
exactly. But that name has a very negative connotation, where internment is, it feels softer. And that's problematic in some sense.
Just my last question. So if people want to learn more about the museum, things that you're doing, how to reach you, how to find the museum, things like that, kind of give a quick rundown.
Sure, absolutely. We have, if anyone interested in the museum can go to our website or our Facebook page, The website is NB Internment Camp Museum.ca. We do have a Facebook page. I'm happy to give out my email if people are interested. I recently wrote a chapter in a book called Civilian Internment in Canada that just came out this year through the University of Manitoba Press about the internment camp and the internment camp museum. I've also written an article in the Legion magazine about the veteran guards who worked at the camp, who were veterans of World War I. Yeah, I think that's a great way for people to start. I mean, just Google New Brunswick internment camp and a lot of information will come up. I think it's a fascinating and important part of our Canadian history. Mm-hmm.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Todd from the New Brunswick Internment Camp Museum. And if you did, please give a rating and review. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.com. And you can find hundreds of articles on Canada's history on my website. Just go to canadaehx.com. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.